Hi, this is Jay Washburn.
And I'm Joe Bendusky.
And you're listening to Start Writing.
So, sorry we missed December. I was up against a deadline that I thought I was going to miss, and Jay always takes off, so I didn't even bother contacting him. So we did not go away. We're still doing one a month, and we are back. We don't have part two of Villains yet. This was something that kind of came up in my back and forth editing of a friend's book. So, and this is what we're going to call expand the scene. So if you listen to our Wasted Words episode, this is like the opposite of that. What this is I was editing his book, and every once in a while I'd highlight a section or a sentence or something, and I would say expand. And then that was my whole note. And at one point he came to me and said, what does this mean? I don't know what you mean by expand. And there's a couple reasons why you would want to expand a scene. So in Wasted Words, we talked about this 300 words to reach a plot point. And I think we talked about like 11,000 to have kind of a dramatic arc reach its peak and complete to kind of give that reader that optimal 90-minute reading experience. This, so this statement kind of feels like it's in contradiction to those points, because if you're expanding things, it's going to be moving those word counts around. Some of the reasons you would want to expand a scene is to slow the pacing. And that sounds weird, but if it's a dramatic moment, you can kind of let the reader indulge in that moment a little bit. You can use expanding to heighten the tension or draw out the action of a scene. One of the places in almost all books you'll see a scene expanded is the climax, because the reader's not waiting for anything anymore. They're not looking forward to the next moment. They're in the moment they've waited the whole book for, and they want to enjoy it. And if it's over too quickly, it can be disappointing. And so that can happen with anything that a reader is really looking forward to, is if you move through it too quickly, it's disappointing. They didn't get the big payoff they were looking forward to. It can also be helpful if sometimes big plot twists, if they come too quickly or aren't explained enough, they can be more confusing than, just giving them that surprise effect, like, whoa, I didn't see that coming. It's like, wait, what happened? So these are reasons you'll want to kind of slow the pacing, just to kind of expand those scenes, let the reader really sink into them more, to help them appreciate, understand, or just enjoy those moments more. And so we're going to go into some specific examples and really walk through how to expand it and the different tools there.
Can I just mention a couple things that come to mind?
Yeah.
One is the play Hamilton, the musical. When we go there, like, we all heard in, I don't know, third grade or something, that Burr shot Hamilton, right? We know it.
Yeah.
And the whole play, we're leading up to that, and we know that that happens. But they get to the end, and Burr and Hamilton are aiming pistols at each other's heads, right? And they stop right there. And Hamilton takes an aside, pauses that action of the aiming the pistol, and says, what is a legacy like? And we know he's about to die, and they just stretch that moment out. And I think it's a perfect example of what you're talking about. It's like, okay, we've been looking forward to this. Like, let's dig in. And you really feel it, because they pause the action and get into the character's head. Anyway, it's cool. Yeah.
Well, and I think a lot of, like, one of the examples I used in talking to my friend is, he says, imagine you've got one of these Western duels, right? Where they stand, 30 paces from each other, draw and shoot and see who wins. Well, the scene itself will actually play out in just a few seconds, right? Mm-hmm. I think somebody mentioned, like, the average gunfight is less than a minute. But if
that's in real life.
Yeah, right? That's in real life. Yeah, yeah. Whereas this is just really quick. And so the whole scene would probably take place in 5 seconds, maybe less, depending on the count, right? That's how fast it goes on. But the way they slow the pacing so you can really enjoy that moment, really heighten the tension, mm-hmm. is they focus on each man's face for a moment, and then their hand, and maybe you see the fingers twitching a little bit, and maybe we get a look at their face, and then you get a shot of the town, and either everyone's watching or everyone's inside, and then maybe we get another look on the faces, and there's a change in expression, and then we get the first count, right? And then we go back to, how does their body react? How does their what's their emotional reaction to the first count? And then the second, and then the third, right? And all of it just drawing out that moment, that any one of those shots is almost long enough to be the whole scene itself.
Man, and I feel like that's actually an advantage that fiction has over, sorry, that writing has over, like, movies. I feel like you can stretch out the action in a movie, but in writing, you can, I just think you have more leeway to pause.
Mm-hmm.
And you can go deeper. So that's like an advantage that we should take advantage of that.
So, well, I don't necessarily think we can do it bigger because you just mentioned Hamilton and they did it during the play. And you've seen movies like that, right? Like maybe you'll have the moment of, maybe this will be like the opening shot of the scene and the people are about to, you know, it's draw. And then they grab their guns and you hear the leather whistle as the gun's pulled. And then he says, let's talk about how we got here.
Okay.
You know, yeah, and so there's a different way of doing it. I think it's a bigger interruption in film or television to do it that way, but they still have the tools to do it.
Okay, so here's another thing. I don't know if this is a great metaphor, but imagine you take a pencil and you try to balance it on the graphite, like on the pointy end,
mm-hmm.
and it'll keep tipping over one way or the other, and you try to line it up just right, and it keeps tipping back and forth. It's hard to find that peak point. And this is a metaphor for expand the scene versus be concise, right?
Yeah.
And there's a careful balance because you can go way too short, but you can be too wordy.
Mm-hmm.
And right now we're going to talk about, well, if you've been too short, this is how to come the other direction.
And but, if you've been too wordy, listen to wasted words.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Okay. So we've talked about why you're going to want to expand the scene. Now we're going to look at how to do it. So the first thing I want to do is kind of throw out this is the sentence we've got. And we're going to expand this sentence with all the different tools. And you're going to see how each of them produces a very different effect when it is expanded. So here's the sentence. Jay shot Alvaro in the stomach. So that's our sentence. Now, I'm going to say before we get into these, the first rule of expansion is to know your genre and to know your scene. What is the drive and focus of the scene? Because those two will determine what you want to expand and how you want to expand it.
And I just want to make an aside. This is J-A-Y. This is a character from Joe's novel.
Yeah.
I'm just J.
Yeah, these examples are not from the novel at all. But I wrote them up just with that sentence that could easily fit into the novel. So our first one is the five senses, right? This is something that people bring up a lot when they talk about show, don't tell. So we're going to take this line. And we're going to expand it by using the five senses. So we're going to talk about what they see, smell, taste, feel, all of that. Okay? So let's go to our example. Jay shot Alvaro in the stomach. Blood sprayed out over the floor. Where it hit the walls, it now dripped, sticky, wet, but moving. The scent of gunpowder stung his nostrils, and the weapon felt lighter in his hand. Doctors say blood has a smell, something most people aren't familiar with. It takes a lot before you notice it. Jay could smell it now in the dark basement. He took a few steps forwards towards the dying man. This was the bittersweet taste of vengeance. So you can see I've covered everything here. I talk more in detail about what he sees, the smell of the gunpowder after the gun's been fired, the weight of the gun in his hand is that touch, that kinesthetic feel. I even talk about the smell of the blood. For taste, I had to use a metaphor because it just did not fit well. And way back in another episode, we talked about how often with taste, to include it, you're going to need to use metaphors.
Yeah.
But yeah, so, you know, and the some of these, like I talk about for sound, the dripping of the blood, right? I don't say sound, I don't say hear, but drip infers sound, right? This drip of the liquid. So yeah, so that you can see how it's expanded the scene. It brings the scene to life more, but as we look at some of these other examples, you know, maybe more setting is not what the scene needs, and so we'll talk about tools for that. So now I do want to dig into the point of metaphor here. Here I've used a metaphor just to bring in taste. But often with metaphors, we're going to be dealing with mood. So I'm going to take a really short side step here and talk a little bit how we can leverage mood through metaphors. So mood determines how a character and how a reader reacts to scene. So if they are lonely, the way they see the world feels lonely, and that is manifest in the color choice, descriptions, and metaphors of the scene. So we'll look at an example. I'm actually working on a whole episode on mood, but for now we just want to take this quick side step. So when you're writing the metaphors to expand your scene, you're still paying attention to the mood. So the scene was a character is injured in a horse riding accident and fears that her Olympic dreams are over. So this was the original writing of the scene. I lay in bed, the cast wrapped around my body. Through the window I could see the leaves drifting down from the trees, the bright sun catching and lighting their colors as they fell, a kaleidoscope of colors. And so here she's in bed, and it's kind of this bright, sunny fall day. It's nice, it's beautiful, it's kind of serene. And when I read that, I was like, no, that's not at all what this scene is about. Mm. So I rewrote it so that it would fit with what she's feeling. And I said, so I lay in bed, a cast wrapped around me, the tomb of my hopes holding me down, holding them back. Outside the window, the fall sun burns bright like it's summer, baking the life from the leaves until they are brittle. A gentle breeze knocks them loose. They fall. They shatter. Like me. Right?
Nice.
And so now, I didn't change the setting. I changed the mood of the setting through how I chose to describe it. And the metaphor that, you know, these leaves are like her bones that shattered in this accident. Just everything around her is reminding her of the tragedy. And she just can't get away from it. So that was a tangent on mood for you. So we will probably come back to these in that episode. Then we'll talk about what we'll call the sixth sense, or the visceral and body language. So this is what's happening internally to the character, like skin temperatures and their stomach and their breathing. All of these kind of internal sensations that we usually don't think of with the five senses. And also, the body language kind of goes along with it, because these are about portraying the emotions of the characters, right? Whereas the first one was just adding to the setting, this is going to deal more with how they feel. So we'll go back to our example. Jay shot Alvaro in the stomach. It was different than target practice, the explosion of the round, the crisp impact against the mat, but flesh was wet and sloppy. The sound turned Jay's stomach like vomit splashing on the floor. Then came the smell, blood, bile, and half-digested food. He fell to his knees. It was not like the movies, not like the TV shows. Vengeance was disgusting, not triumphant. Mm. So here we talk about what's going on internally with him, his kind of just visceral reaction to happen, and then we roll that into an element of body language that is a component of that emotion moving through him. This is more something you're going to be looking at, and if the focus of this scene is not the setting itself, but how the character feels, right? Is the story played out that this is then the catalyst for changing how he lives, right? He's been hunting this man down for his vengeance, and now he has this strong emotional reaction to these choices. Does that change his character? Is that the focus of the scene? We've reached a catalyst of character? Then this would be a good way to expand it, because that's what we've done. We've made it about how he feels and his reaction to those emotions.
So is there a clash between these two? Could you just put them both in there?
You could. Well, we're going to go through, and by the time I get to the end, be like, if you put all of this in there, it's too big, right? You reach the point, be like, good God, when does this end, right? And we'll see the strengths and weaknesses of each of them, and you could probably get away with putting two in. You know, I think at three, that might get a little long.
Okay.
But we can probably get in at two. But which two you'd pick, you'll kind of see, like, in the next one actually goes very well with this one. Like, if you were to pick two that just really went hand in hand, it would be these two. Or, okay. Because the next one we're going to talk about is interiority and verbatim thought, which goes very hand in hand with emotions.
Yeah.
Let's talk about that one. If you're unfamiliar with the term interiority, this is about the character's internal thoughts and some of their emotions, but it's more them thinking the emotions as opposed to feeling them, as we talked about with the visceral. It's how they process the world. And so it's a lot of times it can be kind of confusing when writers are unfamiliar with the terminology and they'll interchange terms and different things like this. The only thing you need to know is if that thought could essentially just be a line of dialogue they said in their own head, it's in italics. But if it's not, then it's not in italics and it can still be their internal thoughts. So that's really the only thing you need to know. As far as like labels, it's not relevant as long as you don't have trouble writing it. Let's go back to our example. Jay shot Alvaro in the stomach. It didn't feel like he expected. There was no thrill. He'd run races, won races, felt a sense of triumph, but there was none of that now. His body felt weak as the adrenaline from his head faded. He approached the dying man. In his mind, Jay had practiced 1,000 different quips for the moment. But all he could think was to ask himself, was it worth it? But at least it was finished. Even if the hunger for vengeance wasn't satisfied, there was nothing left for it to eat. And so I would point out that this would actually be a better moment for the bittersweet vengeance line, because it relates to how he's thinking about it right now. He's weighing the positive and the negative against each other at this moment. And so that metaphor fits better here, but it doesn't fit with the examples I'm constructing. So I did want to point that out. He has this verbatim thought, was it worth it? Right? His own question to himself in his head. So that's in italics. But then the rest of it is his thoughts. And there's a few mention of how he's feeling, but it's not really about how he's feeling. It's how he's thinking about how he's feeling. If you really watch the language itself, this is the mental processes as opposed to the physical emotional reaction being kind of laid out here. And so, like I said, this actually goes very hand in hand with that visceral and body language. It gives you a lot of in-depth perspective at this character. You can see what he's feeling and then how he thinks about what he's feeling. Then we have the breakdown of the physical steps. This technique is used a lot in action novels and climaxes and movies. Like we talked about, like the gunslinger's fight, right? That's about breaking down the steps and really focusing on each one individually that make it up. So this was actually a comment Jay had made on my novella that I released in December. And there was a moment where he said, can you slow this down? I feel like it comes too fast. And so one of the things I did, as I said, let me break down the physical steps that make up this moment to slow it down for the reader. So in this one, I'm not going to use that base sentence, Jay shot Alvaro in the stomach. And the reason is that sentence is what I'm actually pulling apart into a whole paragraph, right? Everything else was kind of, you know, digging into kind of the aftermath, right? His feelings, his thoughts, or just the change in the setting because of the action. Whereas this is the action itself exploded into a much bigger thing. The gun was heavy in Jay's hand, the weight tugging at the muscles in his shoulders. He held it extended out, part weapon, part accusation. It pointed at the man he'd been hunting for 5 years. Under his finger, the tension of the trigger strained. The slick steel under the soft pads of his hand. Jay met Alvaro's eyes, then shifted back to the man's stomach. That's where the bullet would go. Then he squeezed, his whole hand gripped tight. The gun kicked back at him, and the bullet exploded out, ripping into Alvaro's stomach. So there, that one sentence is just expanded into a big paragraph, slowed way down.
I really like that. That's cool.
So, and this one actually goes very well with the five senses, because this is a very physical paragraph, and that one is, again, very physical in the setting, right? So, like I said, if you put all of these together, it's too much. Like, the reader's just like, when does this end? Does it just keep going? Like, the guy shoots one other man. Like, it took like 2 seconds, maybe less, and I've had 3 pages.
That's funny. Man, that, as you've read all these and we've seen it from the different angles, I do feel like you just really get a sense for it. I think it's cool. This is at least a cool experiment.
So the real question is picking which technique to expand with. Because as you go through each one, you can see how each one really portrays the scene very differently. It has a different focus and a different emphasis. And so part of that's going to be driven by genre. And part of that is going to be driven by the scene itself, right? if it's an action scene, then breaking down the steps of the action is a really good way to expand it and keep it focused because it's an action scene, right? Like, it's the car chase. You want to watch the car chase. But if the action is secondhand to what's happening, then that's not where you need to expand. So think of the climax of Star Wars A New Hope, right? They're trying to destroy the Death Star. Luke has made a couple of attempts to get his missiles in there. And so the interesting thing is we've seen that. The X-Wing goes down. They fly through the tunnel. They try to make the shot. And so the action is become repetitive, right? We've seen a couple X-Wings try it. We've seen Luke try and fail, right? So we've seen that action before. And so as he's going in for his final attempt, he hears Obi-Wan through the Force, and that scene is not about the action that's happening, partly because we've seen it before, and partly because what the scene is really about is what Luke thinks and feels. So if you're writing this scene and you're going to expand it, the expansion is that interiority or that visceral, right? What does Luke think? What are his mental processes as he goes through this? And how is he feeling and emotionally reacting to this to make that choice? Do I trust the computer or do I trust the Force? Right? And so if that's where you expand, then it keeps the focus of the scene where it's supposed to be. Right? Whereas if we look at that scene and we say, I'm going to expand on the action, then it shifts the focus away from where it should be. Right? The scene is about the dilemma within Luke on how to make this choice. And that's not about expanding the senses. It's not about expanding the action. It's about expanding the interiority. The note I'm giving my friend is fairly vague. I'm leaving it up to him to make the choice on how he's going to expand the scene. But we wanted to cover the basic tools there and then point out that you don't just pick one because you're good at it. You pick one that keeps the scene focused on what the scene is about.
Dude, that's awesome.
Yeah.
This is good stuff.
Yeah. So I felt that was a good episode.
Yeah, totally. Well,
and partly just because, like, you know, I was like, you know, I bet there's a lot of writers who, you know, they get, like, comments like you, be like, can you slow this down? Or I think even a lot of times if somebody says, I was confused here, solving that confusion is about expanding that scene, and that will clear that right up.
Yeah.
You know, you get these comments and you may not necessarily know how to address that. You know, I was confused here, or, you know, maybe even I was bored here. Maybe if you expand the right point, you can take that boredom away.
Although not always. A lot of times boredom means cut.
Yeah. A lot of times boredom does mean cut. Yeah. So I hope that makes it clear on not only how to expand a scene, but how that impacts the scene differently. Particularly, you could see us work through each example and see how it played out very differently each time we expanded it with a different tool.
Yeah.
So if you enjoy this episode or the podcast in general, leave us a review tell your writer friends or your writer group to check us out. Let us know if you want an episode on a specific topic or clarification on a topic we've covered in the past. And thanks for listening. Oh, if you want to find us, joseph-bendosky.com/start-writing is kind of the official site for the podcast. And there all the new episodes kind of upload on the little player we've got set up there. You can find us on most – I mean, if you're listening to us, you probably know where to find us. if you want to email us, you can just send that to jbndoski@gmail.com. And, I think if you Google us, Podbean is what comes up first, and that's where our server hosts are. Kind of everything gets pulled from there. But if you want to see the text, then just head to the website. Particularly, I think some of our marketing episodes, like how to write a blurb and stuff, you're going to want a reference text for that. So, yeah.
Guys, thanks for listening. We appreciate it, and we love the feedback too, so thank you.